14, Nest Predator Bounty Program.
All right, good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the Commission, Secretary Hepler. Kevin Roblin here, Deputy Secretary with the Game Fish and Parks. Before we get into the resolution found on page 14, I want to just talk a little bit about the Nest Predator Bounty Program and really what those objectives are of that program. It was a great program we conducted in 2019, and the department has a strong desire to do this program once again, and for the reasons of enhancing pheasant and duck nest success. That's one of the reasons, exposing people to South Dakota's trapping traditions and ensure South Dakota's hunting and trapping heritage remains strong for the next 100 years. That's really important to the department, that we continue the strong trapping heritage we have here in South Dakota. Obviously, we want to reduce nest predator numbers, and lastly, get the next generation involved and interested in outdoor recreation, conservation, and wildlife management, while really increasing broad support for habitat. And obviously, this conversation goes hand in hand with habitat, and that is very, I always talk too loud, I'm sorry. I'm excited.
Slow down.
I got a lot of coffee. So with that, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to just get into the resolution found on page 14. If you could turn your attention to page 14. You know, removal of nest predators has been a management technique in South Dakota for decades. It literally has. I mean, we've been doing this on our game production areas. We have staff currently even probably in a couple months here start trapping on some of our game production areas to enhance duck and pheasant nest success. You know, intensive predator removal efforts can enhance nest success if it's done three things: at a localized level, at high intensities, and during the primary nesting season. You know, the Nest Predator Bounty Program, some of the changes that were made at the last commission meeting starting April 1st, running through July 1st, that is the primary nesting season. So there's one of the criteria right there that is being met. 90% of those tails that were submitted last year were submitted on the eastern side of the state. So there's another, you know, criteria that is essentially being met from the distribution of tails. You can see here, this is the map of the distribution of tails. Once again, it just shows that all the color on this map is on the eastern side of the state, indicating the vast majority of those tails did come from eastern South Dakota. And then at high intensities, that is a very hard metric to measure. We do not have information or data on how many folks are intensely harvesting nest predators on certain pieces of CRP, but I'm sure there are some. So those were the three criteria that when you do those three things, you can enhance pheasant, duck, nest success. Not only that, but we also have other passerine birds. We have dick thistles, cedrins, bobolinks. We have mourning doves. You know, they're all nesting birds, and these predators are targeting their nest as well. So some of the things I would like to cover when we're talking about changes that the commission recommended in January. We talked about the program, we talked about potential changes to the program, and they're highlighted here in the resolution as well. One of the major changes, and one of the things that we would not recommend or are not recommending this year, and the commission did not recommend, is the trap giveaway program. This resolution does not cover that trap giveaway program because the department has no desire to do the trap giveaway program once again. But another thing that, you know, comes along with that is just the reduction in spending. The spending was $1.7 million with the trap giveaway program, along with the tail program, the Nest Predator Bounty Program, and that collective amount was 1.7. So one of the things that the commission recommended at the last meeting was to reduce the tail expenditures from $10 to $5. And by doing so, that program expenditure, total program expenditure, will be reduced from $1.7 million down to $250,000. So there's a major substantial reduction in spending because of the reduction in the amount of money that we would be buying those tails for, from $10 to $5. A couple other changes: participants under the age of 18 and landowners harvesting nest predators from their own land are not required to have a license. However, one of the changes that was recommended by the commission in January was that all other participants must have a hunting, fishing, or trapping license. Doesn't need to be a fur bearer license. It can be a predator varmint. It could be a fishing license. It could be any sort of license for that matter, as long as they have a license. Again, I already talked about the dates. The commission recommended modifying the dates from April 1st to July 1st. That was one of the major changes as well. And then also looking at the method of take, not just to include trapping, but also to include other methods of harvest. And one of those methods, obviously, is shooting or hunting. So that would be included in the Nest Predator Bounty Program for 2020 if adopted by the commission or approved by the commission. And some of the things that we talk about, how do we measure success? Well, there's a few ways we'd like to measure success. A couple of those ways include the removal of 50,000 nest predators. I mean, that's one of them, obviously, that we're striving for. Increased fur bearer license sales by about 5%, doubling the participation of the Ethics SD course. That's a course put on by our staff. It's a great course that just really goes into the trapping responsibilities, euthanasia techniques. It just is, all in all, it just makes a good trapper. It helps folks get involved in the trapping that have never been involved. Great course, has a lot of participation and a lot of interest. And also, we want to see 20% of bounty participants be under the age of 18. That's a metric we're striving for as well. We need those mentors, though. We need to create outdoor families. We need mom involved. We need dad involved. We need grandpa and grandma involved, aunts and uncles. We need to create outdoor families. It is about the youth, but it's not all about the youth. And if Tania was sitting up here next to me, she'd say that very same thing. We need to focus on creating outdoor families. And that is really the key of a lot of what this program does. So with that, Mr. Chairman, I'm sure there will be some questions, but I wanted to give a brief overview as to what that resolution, what the changes are, how we plan to measure success. And with that, I'll take questions at this time.
Thank you, Kevin. Questions? Commissioner Whitmire.
Commissioner Whitmire, thank you. One of the When you think about the Nest Bounty Program, being a fellow that has been farming all his life, I'm familiar with how the whole raccoon thing has turned out specifically. I mean, this isn't just raccoons, but raccoons was the majority of this. On that topic, we had a history, am I correct, that we had a history of pelts being valuable more than the $10 bounties that we paid last year, so we're looking at my own research here, I guess historically speaking, we're kind of in a new era where, especially last year, the pelts weren't worth much at all. Do you know what they were worth?
Yeah, through the chair. Yeah, raccoon pelts in the round are on, you know, that aren't skun out. They're not worth very much at all. Some fur buyers aren't even buying them this year. $3 to $5 is what people are getting for raccoons today. You know, this entire trapping season. So there hasn't been a very good market for that fur, particularly raccoons.
Mr. Chair.
Sure.
Yeah, thank you. So incentive-wise, it's kind of new, I guess, in my opinion, I guess, in reviewing everything, is that we're kind of in a new period of time where in that incentive, financial incentive anyway, for people to control predators isn't there because of what's happened in this fur market, is that it's kind of been a mainstay going back to the French trappers that preceded statehood, that we had some trapping and fur bearing activities that are in 2020 just kind of not enticing people to become active, and thus allowing populations of nest predators and other predators to grow beyond what they would have in the past.
Yeah, through the chair, I mean, that is absolutely correct. I mean, this has been some of the most historic lows when we look at fur bearers, you know, numbers or the price for those raccoon furs in particular. There isn't a lot of value out there, and you're right. I mean, there has been value, more value in the past, and value does initiate participation and effort. When there's high value in fur markets, there's more effort to pursue those fur bearer animals.
Commissioner Olson.
Thank you. Commissioner Olson here. Kevin, we made it a requirement that everyone, as you stated, has to have a license of some sort to participate in the program. Will there be an audit or some type of compliance check done before a check is issued to somebody that turns in tails to make sure that they indeed do have a license? And if they don't, are we going to have penalties for that, or are we just going to hold the check until they can prove that they have a license, or what's the plan for that?
Through the chair. Commissioner Olson, that's a great question. One of the things, you know, we did in the past is have those folks sign an affidavit. We could easily do a cross-reference of the folks, you know, in our GF-79 system, our licensing system, to ensure they do have a license of some sort. There will be some verification processes that will have to occur in order to do so, but yes, we can verify that those folks do have a license because they'd be in our database, into our system, and we can make that cross-reference.
Other questions? Commissioner Sharp.
Commissioner Sharp here. Good presentation, Kevin. You know, I haven't been hugely supportive of this program. You know, it's generated a lot of passion and talk, and but I've kind of boxed myself in on my own line of thinking because I know roosting lakes work. Anecdotally, you talk to anybody that hunts, they're going to say you never shoot the ducks off the roost, but there's no scientific proof that roosting lakes work. There's no scientific proof that a bounty program works either, but anecdotally, talking to people that really take good care of their property, they will tell you that if they do a heavy trapping in the spring, they have found way more success in the nesting of birds on their property than if they don't. Even though the science doesn't support it, anecdotally, we know that it works. And I can't say roosting lakes work, even though the science doesn't prove it, but then say the predatory bounty program can't work because the science doesn't prove it. So both anecdotally, truly they work, and even though this program has generated lots and lots of passion, I find myself having to support this program because I know that the results in the field have certainly helped in northeastern South Dakota. So, but like I say, the department's now got kind of a challenge too because they can't tell me my roosting lakes don't work because the science doesn't support it. So thank you.
Other questions before we get to my questions? Any others?
Commissioner Beast from Fairburn. The chairman and I attended a conference in December out in California, and there's a lot of states there from, you know, all the way from Texas, Nebraska, Oklahoma, on the western side of the states, our region, and every state went around and and talked about what's going on in their state. And one of the big things was their predators are out of control because those states, their rights to trap has been taken away. And because of that, their deer numbers are plummeting, their elk numbers are plummeting because of these predators. The you know, their right to trap was taken away from them. And when it come around to South Dakota, I talked about our bounty program and the trap giveaway, and they just couldn't believe it, and they wish they had that right. And anytime we sit here and let people come into our state and take that, bring initiative, HSUS, Audubon, those people come in, and they want us to just give them a little bit, take one little thing off the list, it erodes our right, and we should not give them that opportunity. And so I support trapping, and you know, this bounty program is a good deal. On the way down the other day, I stopped in Phillips, South Dakota, and I was talking to a couple individuals, and there's this gal sitting there, and I explained why I was going to Pierre, and she goes, "You make sure and vote yes for the bounty program." She has two little boys. They ranch north of Phillip, and these two boys just are waiting for this opportunity to go out and trap again this year because they got the free traps last year, and they're just waiting for it to reinitiated to have the opportunity again. So it did work. It got kids outside. It got them enjoying the outdoors, and that's what we're here to promote.
Other questions? Comments? I've got some questions, of course, but so if we follow up on the comments that even this morning about passion, and I mean, there are some strong feelings out there, and we had 400 emails, most of which were against the program, and the comments yesterday were that way too. And so those who are against it pretty much are telling us the same things. There's common themes that go through that, and so that's the focus of my questions today, so that we're all clear on whether those themes that we're hearing about are accurate or not. And so of all the comments that we got, I've looked at them all, as I'm sure we all have, but I'm going to focus on the Isaac Walton one, the fellow that I think is an acquaintance or maybe friend of Commissioner Locken's up in the north, and I think he's maybe even somebody that the department has consulted with on this, because he's been hunting and trapping for 45 years, and his father has, and he wrote not only a long email, but he called and we spoke when I was driving here for half hour or so. And then there's a former employee of the department that sent a long email yesterday or the day before. And then there's a former commissioner, GFP commissioner, that's written. So they, to me, have some credibility and then raise some valid questions. So those are where my questions are going to go. And so if we look at the Isaac Walton letter, I mean, in the middle of that, they talk about if there's 50,000 predators trapped, that results in their world, or their view, is one animal for every 1,000 acres. And you in the past, when we've talked about the bounty program, I mean, removing 50,000 predators is 50,000 predators, but when you consider the whole state of South Dakota, my understanding from listening to you in the past and reading what they're writing is, in terms of pheasant numbers, that's just an insignificant reduction of predators. Is that true or not?
Through the chair. So if we go back to this map here, where 90% of these tails did come from eastern South Dakota, if you look at the eastern third of South Dakota, we could probably say 80% of those tails came from the eastern third. So we could whittle that one predator removed for 1,000 acres down to one predator removed to 300 acres per se. There are going to be situations where there are going to be multiple predators removed from an individual's piece of property. I know of many folks that trapped on a quarter section alone and would take 80 to 100 predators off that quarter section. So there has been targeted efforts. There is. If you distribute those animals across the entire state, absolutely, your numbers are correct. But there are efforts that are focused, they're localized, they're at high intensities, and they're during that primary nesting season, which those things can enhance. I'm not going to say significantly increase pheasant nest success to duck nest success, but they can enhance nest success.
So the one fellow yesterday said, show me the data. You remember that? And one of the ways to show him the data would be last year in the 2019 bounty program, did the department try to assess whether pheasant numbers increased because of the bounty program? And can you do it?
Through the chair, we did not try to assess how the bounty program impacted the population performance of pheasants across the landscape. The answer is no. And the reason is the study design, the way this is set up, there is no study design. I mean, it would take a control, it would take a treatment, it would take upwards of a $500,000 survey to do an intensive removal effort on one area of a CRP field and none on the other, and replicate that numerous times. I mean, that's what an intensive study design would require. This is not the case. This program, you know, it is addressing those two things, enhanced predator removal at, you know, intense levels in some certain situations, but during the primary nesting season, you know, in at a localized area, and that's going to be dependent on the trapper. But at the end of the day, the study design was not set up to quantify significant increases in pheasant nest success.
Right, and so when you talk about intensive bounty programs, I mean, that's not really what this is. I mean, if we go look at that one study that is out there, that's a very limited amount of acres. It's a very intense local effort, and it went on for some time, right? I mean, that's just not what this bounty program is.
Mr. Chairman, this bounty program is about getting families outdoors. It's about enhancing our trapping traditions for the next 100 generations, and that's really, you know, we want to go back to that. We want to go back to making sure we have trappers in this state to make sure that our kids and our kids' kids continue that trapping tradition, to make sure then we can have some predator removal management techniques and tools in that toolbox when we need those tools in our toolbox.
Yep, no, I understand. And just just so that we're all clear, I mean, last year we didn't. This year we're not going to. I mean, when we list the how are we going to judge success of this bounty program, not last year, not this year. I mean, we're not listed in the resolution is actual documentation that pheasant numbers increased. True? I mean, that we can agree on that.
We will not be able to quantify the effects of this program in actual pheasant nest success. We can't. Not the way the study designed. There is no study design, so those effects cannot be quantified.
And so, I mean, it's really maybe asking the same question, but for all those people that have written in and talked yesterday about whether it's show me the data or show me the science, that, I mean, there's really nothing to show them. There's no data to show them, no science to show them, right? Just so we're clear on that.
The only science we can show them is that we're removing upwards of 40-plus thousand nest predators from the eastern side of the state where those pheasants and ducks, that's where they're produced. For the vast majority of those pheasants and ducks where they're produced.
So then if we go to the next email, and this is the fellow from up in Commissioner Lockham's territory, and I'm sure you know who it is, and I know Keith knows who it is, and I think the department has talked with him and his dad maybe from time to time about bounty programs. Seems like a very knowledgeable fellow and rational and reasonable in his thinking. And I mean, he raises the same themes that most everybody has, and so I'm not going to go over that again. But one of the things that he talked about for a long time yesterday, or 2 days ago when I was driving over, is by doing this at the nesting time, kids are out there being taught to trap these pregnant animals, if you will, and then cutting their tails off and abandoning the carcass out there, as opposed to, and my understanding is otherwise, trapping would happen later in the year, in the fall or the winter, and the animals would be trapped and they would be sent to market, and I mean that, and they would be sold. So he's very concerned about the ethical lessons that are being taught to kids given the timing of this program and what's being trapped, what's being taken, and what's being left or abandoned, the carcasses. So, I mean, is that a valid concern? I mean, how would the department respond to him? And others have raised the same question, and we could pull out many emails about that.
So the North American model talks about wildlife management and conservation, and hunters and trappers are the number one tool for managing wildlife populations, for managing predator populations. And there's no doubt that, yeah, there are concerns about the ethics. I surround myself with hunters and trappers my entire life, and people genuinely care about the well-being of these animals. That's who they are.
Sure.
And at the end of the day, we need the management tool to manage these predators, to manage wildlife populations, and hunting and trapping are those tools.
Yeah, and I'm not here to talk about being anti-hunting and trapping. I mean, I'm not. But his concern is a specific time of year as opposed to the other time of year for trapping, and what's happening when we just have tails we're dealing with and carcasses. I mean, we've seen, you've seen, I mean, there are carcasses that we have all seen pictures of that are laying here, there, and everywhere. So I guess I go back to what do we tell him and others that are concerned about that?
I think you have some other commissioners that want to chime in, so.
Well, that's fine. Commissioner Whitmire.
If I could, yeah.
Sure.
Mr. Chair, Commissioner Whitmire. I've too been watching the responses, the inputs, listened to yesterday's input, and you know, there's a number of topics that I would like to address, and so excuse me if I go a little too long here, but on the ethics specifically, driving in Wednesday night, and obviously spring is just around the corner if it's not here, and the skunks have come out of hibernation and they're on the roads and they're being hit by cars. I mean, I think we're used to seeing that. But I do want to point out that in lieu of control of the predator numbers, that growth will happen. And that growth will, there will be limiting factors. There are limiting factors. We no longer have wolves. Just a reality is that going back 150 years, there were no raccoons in South Dakota by the records. So Lewis and Clark, there were no entries. There were no entries by Audubon. It was documented that there was a Native American who was born in Rapid City or the Black Hills and traveled throughout that area, Wyoming, Nebraska, went through Kansas. When he got to Oklahoma, he shot an animal he'd never seen before, and that was a raccoon in 1877. They just weren't here, and so we've got this new era. They've come in. They've followed the planting of grains. They've followed everything that has enabled them to reach the populations they have today in South Dakota, planting of trees, homesteads, and then beginning in the 60s, this introduction of the abandoned farmstead. I mean, that's huge, and it's a new thing, and it's enabled predators, especially raccoons, coyotes, to have these areas that that are unmolested for them. And so we've got this growing population, and I'm concerned with what is that upper limit if it's not controlled, and it's distemper, it's rabies, it's diseases that they get from those communal activities with other raccoons, and when you hit those barriers, we will have die-offs. But two, as far as ethics go, I think that's poorer of us to let that just happen and run its course on its own than to try to control a lower population. In those cases, none of those carcasses are going to be utilized, I guess, either way. So on the ethics thing, I think this is actually my preferred method versus disease and what happens at a much higher population to that's ultimately at the end of such a thing of doing away with this. And so that's on the ethics. And on the every raccoon matters. I want to speak to that. Every raccoon is not aggressively looking for nesting. That's not their nature. It's the nature of a red fox and other species, but not raccoons. However, they wander. They wander 1.5 miles per day on average. So during the nesting period, from that time that a duck or a pheasant or a bobolink lays an egg until that nest hatches, if it's 50 days, that's 75 miles of each raccoon traveling during that nesting time. And so you're going to have a higher incidence of interaction between a nesting nest predator and a nesting bird. And so without a doubt to me, every raccoon, every skunk matters to every pheasant, every duck, and every songbird that's nesting. And so I, as intensive or extensive as we get, I just want to say to those that are supportive of South Dakota wildlife and everything that that I feel that every effort to improve is an important effort, and it's a success just to have people interested and invested in our habitat and in our wildlife. Thank you,
Commissioner Locken.
Commissioner Locken here. Let's take a stroll through history a little bit here. We had a very difficult winter of the fall of 2018 and the spring of 2019. It was tough on our deer populations, extremely tough on our pheasant populations. And in the spring of 2019, our flooding started, and there was unusually high rainfall all over the state, which pushed the pheasant nesting into the same habitat that the raccoons are in. So we were really limited there, and I think we made headway last spring, jump-starting our pheasant population by taking out some of the raccoon. I see it every day when I leave my yard. I drive beside a shelter belt, and we intensively trapped that shelter belt, and we had some good good hatches there. I guess the governor said we want South Dakota to be open for business, and I think jump-starting this pheasant population is probably the best marketing tool. The state has got to have a strong pheasant hatch. And I know this program maybe isn't the best, but I think it's the best thing we got right now. We're in an unusual weather situation, and I want to make it clear I'm supporting it. Thank you.
Other questions? Commissioner Boyd.
Commissioner Boyd here. A quick question about trapper numbers. I know hunting licenses are down. I thought trapper numbers at this point were at least steady and not on the decline.
Through the chair. Yes, Commissioner Boyd, we have had a pretty consistent number of fur bearer licenses sold in the last 5 to 10 years. We'll see peaks and valleys, and some years we're down 10%, some years we come back, and it does have a reflection on the markets, the fur markets in particular. This last year, 2019, we were up about 6.7%, just over 3,000, and we hope to see that number continue to climb. Again, though, you don't need a fur bearer license per se to trap nest predators. Excuse me. So at the end of the day, fur bearer participation rates, I mean, if you're thinking, you know, as far as how many trappers we have in the state, 3,000 isn't, you know, all that many. We have 53,000 deer hunters, 65,000 pheasant hunters, 60,000 anglers, those sorts of things. So this is a small group, and the issue about this group is they're getting older, and there's nobody to replace the folks that are trappers, and that is a concern. So we are concerned about this demographic of trappers, and as time goes on, we want to make sure we have trappers on the landscape to utilize as a management tool to reduce predator numbers.
Sorry.
With the increase of trapper licenses, do you think that the price of coyotes going up is what caused that? Because coyote prices went up 2 to 3 times what they were. If they're up 4,000 licenses, do you think that was part of it? I know coon prices as of 2 years ago weren't even a dollar. Like you said earlier, it was only $3 for 3 to 5 this year. I think the increase in those trapping licenses was because of the coyotes prices going so high and everybody was after them.
Through the chair.
Sure.
Coyotes are considered a predator varmint, so technically speaking, you wouldn't need to have a fur bearer license to harvest a coyote. You could have a big game tag, a deer tag for that matter. You could have a predator varmint license, which are $5 for residents. So there are a lot of other folks that just target coyotes that don't actually buy a fur bearer license. But you're absolutely correct. Coyote market's doing very well. Actually, I had a buddy text me this morning. He said there was a guy in Alberta that got $340 for a coyote in the round. So that's incredible. And at the end of the day, I would say that, yes, fur markets do drive participation rates at times, and you can probably attest some of that to the high coyote markets, the fur markets that we see here today.
Commissioner Olson.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Commissioner Olson here. While we're digressing into coyotes for a moment, I just wanted to, you know, you said it, they're a predator, and what this is about is nest predator, and they're not covered by what we're talking about here today. However, you know, we spend on aerial coyote hunting alone probably, what, $300,000 annually, just the aerial flights?
It's upwards of, you know, the animal damage control program is over $1 million, Commissioner Olson.
Sure, but I'm talking about specifically just flying planes.
It'd be close to that $1 million expense.
And that's a combination of license dollars and county assessed livestock fee, right?
Yes. Yep.
And so with the rest of the ADP that we do, we're talking about, you know, our state trappers and the different folks that go out and answer rancher calls about killing coyotes for on their behalf, right? And that's funded by licensed dollars as well, right?
It is, yes, sir.
Well, that's what my long-winded point here is. people are upset that we're spending license dollars instead of going into habitat on these nest predators, and at the same time we're spending three times what we're talking about here, four times, on coyotes, which I'm fully in favor of, even though I'm a good USD coyote myself, and we're going to win the Summit League on both the men's and the women's. But you know, what's the difference there? How come we aren't seeing the same outrage that we're spending that money versus what we're talking about here?
Is that a question? I don't. Part of the coyote money comes from another fund altogether, right? That, I mean, we're not here to get into that, but
it does. Yeah, there are about $300,000 comes from the counties right now. But yes, some of that, most of that money is licensed dollars.
So, other questions? I mean, I have some more, but so. If we can't really assess, and we're not going to be able to tell anybody that pheasant numbers increased last year because of this, or this year pheasant numbers increased because of it, and if we have concerns about the time of the year, and I understand it's called the Nest Predator Program, what's the problem with doing it at a different time, doing it in the fall when we don't have these pregnant animals and we aren't just leaving the carcasses behind? Well, if the goal is to get people out, kids out, to trap, learn how to trap and deal with that, why not move it to the fall?
So enhancing pheasant, duck, and ground nesting bird nest success is a goal. It's an objective I stated earlier. If we were to take the Nest Predator Bounty Program out of the primary nesting season, the chances of enhancing nest success for those critters, I mean, there won't be a lot of correlation there to enhance nest success, Commissioner.
Yeah, I understand. So then let me switch to, because I know we don't want to spend all morning, let me switch to the former employee who wrote, and he was talking about the subjects, among others, same themes, but also what Commissioner Boyd brought up, which is the history of license sales for trapping. And I mean, if you look at it, I mean, I think for the last 10 years, it's probably about 3,200 and some every year. Last year it was, I think, 3,532 maybe. And so the fee for that is, the license fee is $30, right?
Yes.
And so, I mean, it seems that that's a constituency that we're here to protect and promote that's been doing well for the last 10 years, really. Isn't that fair?
Well, defining well is a hard definition to put on that number. 3,000 fur bearer license holders in South Dakota, I would like to see that number upwards of 5,000 to 10,000, to be quite honest with you.
But it's been in that 3,000 range for at least the last 10 years. I mean, it's remained really pretty consistent, and if you look at it, it was up a little bit in 12, and I think that was muskrats, up a little bit, not quite so much, in 13, and that was probably due to bobcats, as I recall.
Yeah, I mean, if you're strictly correlating the number of trappers on the landscape to the fur bearer license sales, that's not a great correlation, because landowners don't need a fur bearer license. You don't need a fur bearer license to go hunt coyotes, you know, with a gun. There's other licenses out there, the predator varmint license, that would allow you to do that activity. The fur bearer license is strictly for trapping during November through, you know, the end of February, per se. So there are other user groups out there that are, you know, essentially participating in this management tool as well, that do not have a fur bearer license. But our goal is to make sure we have those folks out there as a management tool. Now, the fur bearer license holders do harvest a substantial amount of critters in the fall. We're talking over 20,000 raccoons are taken during that fall time period as well, from those 3,000 license holders. And we have no way to know how many raccoons or other nest predators are removed in the fall by landowners year-round, per se. And I'm sure there's a substantial number of those as well. So, absolutely. We want to make sure we have the folks out there participating in this management technique, i.e. trapping, and that's what this program is doing.
Sure. And I'm only trying to get to what Mr. Brun the former employee and others have said, which is that constituency group is doing well if you look at this by sales. Even the last 3-4 years, I think the sales for trapping licenses have gone up between 100 and 200, and that is fair, I think, isn't it?
We had 171 more licenses sold this year than last, yes. And we're actually trending upwards in all our license categories, and Heather Villa will cover those here in a little bit. But there's some good news. Hunting, trapping, angling participation's up.
And so the total that comes from this is $109,000, I think, on an annual basis, right? That's what the pie chart says, that maybe we're going to see that again later. Does that sound about right? Every year, trapping licenses generate about $109,000?
Yeah, if we take that 3,400 times 30, yeah, that number sounds about right.
Oh, yep, Commissioner Beese.
Commissioner Beese here. I move to approve the bounty program.
Sure, we can just. So it's the $109,000 annually. And last year we spent $1,750,000 on the trapping, and now the proposal is another $250,000. And on top of that would be employee costs, right? So, I mean, we're something over $2 million over the last couple of years, right?
Yeah, that 1.7 does include staff time. The distribution of those traps was a significant amount of staff time. There was over 16,000 traps we had to distribute. And then there was also the checking in and out of those tails. So all in all, last year's program costs were, yeah, about 1.7 range. This cost we have in front of us today with the program we are talking about now for 2020, it would probably be upwards of 300, 350. I don't have the actual number of staff hours it would take to submit those tails. However, the trap distribution was a big part of the staff time in 2019.
Yes.
Commissioner Beese, I call a question.
Which means we need to vote.
Point of order.
Commissioner Olson.
Point of order. I know that this is going to be a tenuous and stressful topic for a lot of us, and we already all know, I think, where we're going to vote at this, but I don't think we've exhausted the conversation, and the chairman's trying to put out some information. We all know where we're going to be at on this. Let's let the chairman run the meeting, and when he's done with the testimony, then we can allow him to call the question and go for the vote. So I'm not in support of exhausting the conversation right now, even though I know exactly where I'm going to vote. It's probably right next to you.
Yeah, and I think we all know where everybody's going to vote. But so I'm going to follow up a little bit more. Another theme we've seen is, I mean, if this is about kids, why don't we just pay kids? More than one has said that in the emails. It was said again yesterday. Why wouldn't we do that?
Through the chair, Mr. Chairman, it isn't just about kids. It's about creating outdoor families. We need to focus on, you know, those folks that are not just under the age of 18. We need to focus on those college kids. We need to focus on the 30-year-olds, the 35-year-olds, the grandpas and grandmas that want to take these folks out. We need mentors. We need more mentors. And so it isn't just about the kids. It is strictly about creating outdoor families and passing on our future generations, the trapping, hunting, and angling traditions that we all so dearly love.
Then what about the questions that we've gotten regarding other activities, whether it's pheasant hunting or fishing or target shooting? I mean, is there a plan? There hasn't been any money spent so far. Will there be money spent? I mean, if we were buying traps and encouraging that, how many shotguns could we have bought and distributed? How many boxes of shells? How many rifles? How many fishing poles? How many bow and arrows? I mean, none of that's been done other than beyond trapping. Why is that? Is that going to happen so that the focus gets beyond trapping?
Mr. Chairman, every conversation Secretary Hepler and myself have with these great staff behind me, is all about R3. It's about recruiting, retaining, and reactivating folks in the trapping, hunting, and angling world every conversation. We talk about the next generation in this department every single day, and it's not just with trapping. We have angling programs. We have trapping programs. We have shooting programs. We have Hunt Safe in the School programs. Our R3 efforts in this department have been elevated greatly, and it's all to create outdoor families and sustain our hunting and trapping and fishing heritage for many generations to come. So those efforts are happening. We are spending a significant amount of time and money and resources on those efforts, not just trapping, but all of the above. All of the above when it comes to angling, when it comes to hunting, when it comes to just flat out shooting a gun. Maybe it's just trap. Maybe it's just the trap, you know, programs in high schools and other things, but we're all in on this deal, and it's not just trapping. It's all outdoor recreational activities.
Are we going to hear about plans to, I mean, are we going to buy shotguns? Are we going to buy rifles, fishing rods, bow and arrow? I mean, are we going to do that and distribute them as we just try to encourage outdoor activity with kids and their families?
Mr. Chairman, we already do purchase a lot of those outdoor equipment, you know, decoys, guns. We have loaner programs. We absolutely do. We don't give them away per se, but they are in a loaner program, I should say. And at the end of the day, those things are happening. We do loan out fishing poles. We actually give fishing poles away at times. So there are other programs that do exactly what you're asking to do that are geared and focused towards getting those next generations involved in our outdoor recreational opportunities.
Well, it'd be a good idea to collect all that information and get it out there so people can see it's not just focused on trapping, if that's true.
Mr. Chairman, absolutely. And our staff have already been doing that. We have dashboards. We have data management software that does exactly that. It tracks participation rates in different programs. We're in the middle of putting together an R3. It's an R3 strategic plan, if you will, that's going to drive the next 5 years of our department and all of our R3 efforts moving forward. And we're excited for that plan. We're excited to have Tanaya lead that plan and move us in the direction of ensuring, again, our outdoor hunting, trapping, fishing heritage remains strong for the next 100 years.
So, and then just a couple more. Is there a proposal at this time? I mean, will the bounty program come back next year? Because I think there are several who are surprised that it came back this year, thinking last year would be the effort at, and then we'd move on to something else. Is there a plan for next year already?
I'm not aware of that plan at this time, but I think, you know, once we do, if we were to get approval from the commission to run a bounty program in 2020, we'd analyze the data, look at participation rates, you know, look at the overall acceptance of the program in general. We had a very high acceptance rate of the program, and asked, you know, our outdoor enthusiasts, our participants, do you want it again? I mean, we'd have to analyze some of the data once again like we did in 2019, and the data suggested, you know, the folks were very supportive of the program, and that is why we're here in front of you today.
Speaking of that, then, I mean, is it the department's position that South Dakota sportsmen and women, a majority of them, support this program?
Absolutely, it is. We have a really intensive social science survey conducted by, you know, Responsive Management, a third party. That survey suggested over 82% support of the program. I've seen surveys on social media events where 65% of our hunters and anglers and trappers, you know, are supportive of the program. Obviously, there's other surveys out there that contradict those statements, one being the one that you're referring to. We're only 25% supportive of the program, but 50% said they had no opinion or they were neutral. So then again, I mean, it's one of those things. And if we want to talk about surveys, I'd like to bring Farron up here if that would be something you'd like to do. But at the end of the day, there is a lot of support for the Nest Predator Bounty Program.
Yeah, I don't really want to get into all that either today, but with regard to the survey, and that I think was in the former commissioner's questions, I mean, why, would you just explain then, because Mr. Duda said it was the department decision not to survey sportsmen about this, so they weren't. So, I mean, what was the rationale for not surveying South Dakota sportsmen and women specifically as a group with that responsive management survey?
So the responsive management survey did survey sportsmen. There was 418 folks that responded to that survey, and of those folks, 38% lived in rural areas, 58% lived in urban areas, and of that 38%, or even that 58%, you know, the folks that hunt, fish, trap in South Dakota is roughly about 30%. So you could take that number then and extrapolate it, and we do have hunters, fishers, and trappers in that survey that was done and conducted by responsive management. It wasn't strictly targeted towards those user groups, but they're in there. They're in there, and they represent then their that industry or that recreational activity.
Yeah, I mean, there were crosstabs in there, right? That's the word for it, where they would identify people live in town, people live in the rural area. But there were no crosstabs saying, are you a sportsman? Are you a hunter? Are you a fisherman? That wasn't in the survey, was it?
I don't have these, no, it was not. I don't have the actual breakdown if those folks were hunters, anglers, trappers, but proportionately, when you do a scientific survey, and if the sample size is greater than that 350, we're going to capture those folks because it is representative of the population. And the population in South Dakota, we hunt, we fish, we trap at about a 30% rate.
But if it's sportsman money, and we've all seen these comments too, sportsman money paying for this, and the specific group of participants was surveyed, then why weren't sportsmen who pay for this surveyed as a specific group?
So the participants of the program were surveyed, as you know.
Yes, and so I'm asking now why the people who paid for it weren't.
Again, they were in the survey. Maybe not proportionally at the rate you're referring to, but there was a representation of sportsmen and women in the survey.
They weren't separated out, right?
No, there was no targeted survey of sportsmen and women across South Dakota. There was not.
And I'm just wondering why. People who have asked us, why? Why weren't sportsmen, that's all I'm trying to ask is why?
The study design was targeted towards the general population of South Dakotans. Responsive management, that was their effort, that was what they were striving to do, was to represent the general South Dakotan, and that's what their survey demographics then included. So those 418 people, those folks were representative of South Dakota adult residents as a whole.
Okay. I won't ask any more questions. We can go on to the next. Anybody else have any questions? Comments? All right, so now we need to have a motion.
The motion's been made and seconded.
Yes, and then we need any more discussion. Commissioner Olson.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. Thanks, Kevin, for putting all that together, and thank you, Chairman, for the thoughtful questions. You know, again, I think when it comes back to that, the Game, Fish, and Parks Commission is charged with running a business or helping to oversee the management of running a business. And, you know, yesterday when I had the pleasure of being in front of my colleagues in the Senate for my confirmation hearing, one of the things that I told them is what I've said time and time again is that I'm in this deal not to get beat up by somebody because they can't duck hunt where they used to or because they can't apply for as many deer tags they want. It's to get the next generation of sportsmen and women engaged in our state. It's a national trend that I think that we can totally reverse in South Dakota, and we're on our way to doing that. You know, there's just due to, you know, this program alone, there's four different 4-H chapters that have started an ethics program. Ethics stands for ecology, trapping, history, identification, conservation, and stewardship. And we're just getting those young people engaged is a step in the right direction towards why I want to be on the Game, Fish, and Parks Commission. Another one of our goals for this program is to get people under the age of 18 included into this program by increasing that number some 20-some percent. Another thing we're working on right now is our consumer confidence with our marketing efforts that we've started this year. It's a $280 million business that if you don't want that $280 million, I'd really like to see anybody figure out how we're going to replace that. So we have to build back into our model. And this, I think, goes towards consumer confidence. As Commissioner Bees talked about with other folks that he's talked to, that they were jealous that we didn't have, their states don't have the ability. California 17 years ago started down the same path, and now that you can't trap anything besides a mouse, a shrew, a mole, a rat in your own dang house. And I'm obviously in favor of this. I think that it's one of the ingredients that the governor's working on to really get this recipe for a successful business put back together. With her Second Century Initiative, 2,800 acres that she's worked very hard with private and public help from, that's 2,800 acres minus the 200,000 acres of CRP that we've lost in the last two decades. It's a drop in the bucket. But we all got to start piling back together if we're going to have a successful chance at retaining our knockout of being the best pheasant capital of the world. So I'm very supportive of the program and would urge the rest of the commission to do so as well.
The comments, discussion. Well, I think we all know how the vote's going to go, and we'll take it here in a minute. But to be clear, I'm voting against it, and I'm voting against it for three reasons. One is there is no science to support it, and we're not going to be able to tell anybody that it's increasing pheasant numbers. I mean, the bounty science just does not support it, in my view, and I think we're supposed to be focused first and foremost on science. Second reason I'm going to vote against it is we have spent $1,750,000 last year on a constituency that's doing very well. The trapping community seems to be doing very well. It's been consistent in the numbers from the last 10 years. It's gone up 200 or so, roughly, the last several years. So it's doing well. And it's a group that the total annual income is about $109,000. And we've spent that $1,750,000 on that group. And I'm all in favor of that group, but we've spent generously on that. And going forward, we have other needs, huge needs. I mean, I had some slides, we were going to put them up, but there's no reason to do that. But especially when budgets are decreasing, we have other places. We have upland bird numbers that are going down. We have waterfowl numbers that are going down. Certainly we could spend this money there and sort of spread the wealth, if you will. We're working on pheasant marketing. We don't have any money in the Game, Fish, and Parks Department budget for marketing of pheasant hunting. We could spend the money there. So, because I don't think the science supports it, because I think we've already generously spent on a constituency that's doing very well, I think it's time to spend the money elsewhere. And we can always come back and revisit it again. And whether we spend it on waterfowl or pheasants or target shooting or wherever else, I think there's other places to spend the money. So that's why when we have our roll call vote, that's why I'm going to vote no. Yes, Commissioner Boyd.
Because I'm also a no on this particular issue, I just want to chime in. Several of the reasons that I have noted were part of what you just explained, and I won't go through it any further. I think you did a fine job of explaining.
Any other discussion, comments? Commissioner Bees.
Commissioner Bees, Mr. Jensen, you had some very valid points, and I appreciate your opinion. The reason I'm voting for this, there may not be any science, but it's like I stated before, it's eroding our rights, and we have to stick up for our rights or we don't have them anymore. And this program is just one that people are coming after. It's trapping is what we're doing, and it's a trapping issue, and if we don't do this, it erodes that away, and we need to keep it, and
promote this, and it's like I said in my introduction yesterday, you know, hunting, fishing, trapping, and praying to God every day is South Dakota, and that's what we need to do.
Thank you. Commissioner Whitmire.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioner Whitmire, just a comment is that yesterday in our introductions, I mentioned that I went back to school in 88, 7 years after high school. Well, that was because of the Conservation Reserve Program was an ability to, instead of farm that land, I put it, you know, it went into conservation. And so starting in 88, so I'm on my 33rd year of being a participant in that program. The federal government throughout the state of South Dakota spends $100 million a year on the CRP program of 1.1 million acres, $100 million a year. We're talking about $250,000 to enhance the entire state of South Dakota. And I would, if the CRP value of that habitat is $100 million, we've got over $500 million worth of habitat every year of worth in South Dakota. And if we can enhance it at all by lowering the predator intrusion upon the nesting time and enhance the success of our birds that are utilizing that, I think it's the best bang for the buck we got. I think it's money well spent, and I see it as an enhancement. I see it as our statement that we appreciate those CRP values. We appreciate those individuals that are enrolling their property in that, and we too are willing to do what we can to enhance it. And I think back to all those years from the state level, we have the walk-in investments, but I think this just to simply enhance those acres and the productivity, I think is a good statement to those participants in that program as well. Thank you.
Any other comments? If not, all in favor of the motion to approve the bounty resolution, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed?
Aye.
Aye. Have a roll call.
Aye.
Olson?
Aye.
Sharp?
Aye.
Spring?
Aye.
Whitmire?
Aye.
Jensen?
No.
6-2.
6-2. Resolution passes.
Thank you, commissioners.